Hello, everybody. Josh Neighbors here on the Locked On Big 12 podcast, joined today by Emery Lida. He is one half of the new hosting tandem over at Locked On Texas Tech. Locked On Red Raiders. Which one is it, Emery? Make sure I get this one correct.
It's Locked On Texas Tech.
Locked On Texas Tech. See, some schools will send cease and desist. You guys might even get one. Our friend Jake Hatch over at Locked On BYU, he got one. So you guys are lucky you guys get to keep the Texas Tech name. But we got a lot to get into today. Before we do, let you all know that the show is brought to you by NetSuite from Oracle. Check them out. Thousands of businesses have already switched over to NetSuite by Oracle. It's a great financial system, and they've got a financial plan for you today, special for our listeners. Go over there today and check that out, NetSuite by Oracle. All right, let's get to the show. A lot to talk about in Texas Tech hoops and a little football, too, coming up after this.
On Big 12, your daily podcast on the Big 12 Conference, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Once again, hello, everybody. I am Josh Neighbors here, Locked On Big 12 Podcast. Pleased to be joined today by, once again, one of the new hosts of Locked On Texas Tech. That is Emery Lida. Emery, how are you?
Doing well, Josh. It's been nice to get going with the Locked On Network, and obviously we've had a lot to talk about with basketball going through this season so far. Had a nice win over Baylor and Kansas as well. And man, I mean, it's just been nice to see Tech basketball going well and Tech football. I mean, excited to talk about all of it.
Yeah. And just a little background on yourself, you know, just talk to folks about how you got started covering Texas Tech. I will say, whenever I post Texas Tech videos, you know, the fans are really hungry for content. So I'm sure all the fans out there will be really excited to see that we now have a Locked On Texas Tech podcast. Talk about how you got started covering Texas Tech. Where can people find you? All that stuff.
Yeah, so basically about 3.5 years ago, I joined the SB Nation blog, Viva the Matadors, and started out just as a contributing writer, kind of just writing stories here and there. I've always been a huge Tech football and basketball fan. Both of my parents went to a college that had no athletics or anything, so it was kind of my like go-to athletic school. And so I picked that up and wrote for Viva the Matadors for a few years. And then towards the tail end of my time there, I met a good friend of mine in Ryan Mainville. And the two of us decided last year that we would start a podcast called No Middle Madness. We really extensively covered Texas Tech basketball because both of us love analytics and film and kind of built a following there. And then we decided we wanted to keep working on that. And so we've expanded the brand. Obviously, having the Locked On Texas Tech podcast now, that's where you can find us pretty much on any platform. Obviously, both of us have our own personal Twitter. You can follow me at Eraser41. Try to keep things consistent there. Try not to get too crazy. And then, obviously, you can follow our podcast at Locked On TTU. Obviously, available on all platforms. Coming to YouTube soon. And then, finally, you can follow Ryan at RMainvilleLVK on Twitter. He's got a lot of great takes. And he also covers Texas Tech for the Dallas Morning News and has a lot of great stuff there.
All right. So, you know, once again, we're glad to have you aboard. You guys are now, I think you guys are the fourth current Big 12, Big 12 team we have. Oklahoma, TCU, Oklahoma State, and now you all. Obviously, we got BYU coming in. Jake Hatch takes care of that. So we're glad to have you guys. And yeah, I mean, it's been football nonstop, but you know, as kind of football has wound down, the national title on Monday night, you know, it's hard to turn your eyes towards basketball and not immediately turn your eyes towards Texas Tech. And for them, not just the start to the year, but you know, my big question was, look, they had a non-conference schedule where the only really awesome win they racked up was the one against Tennessee. And it wasn't particularly a pretty win, a game that notoriously was booed going to overtime at Madison Square Garden. And so I think the big question for me was about the offense, right? How is the offense? How is Texas Tech going to look in a game where it's like, all right, you got to score, right? And I think some of those questions are still there. But they've racked up probably the best win of the country this past week. They won at Baylor. And I don't think there's any doubt. I don't think any team so far, I can't think of any, that has put together a back-to-back stretch of a win against a team like Kansas and then a win against Baylor. So Mark Adams' team, I don't even think they've come close to playing their best basketball yet, but two of the more impressive wins of the country this season.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it, and it's really just been a dogfight in a lot of the games that Tech has played so far. I mean, you mentioned the Tennessee game, and that was one of the ugliest basketball games I think I've ever watched. But Tech managed to go punch for punch and end up on top. And that was with Terrence Shannon still playing and with Kevin McCullough fully healthy. And really, up through non-conference play, there wasn't a ton of optimism on the national scene for Tech. Certainly, like, they looked like a mid-pack Big 12 team, some team that's going to give other teams headaches in conference play. And obviously, like, they'll be up there in the conference, but I don't think anyone could have expected to start conference season shorthanded, run Iowa State all the way to the wire, and then beat Kansas and Baylor back-to-back. And it's really been incredible to see, because like you mentioned, the offense hasn't been particularly great throughout the season. And against Kansas, we started to see a lot of development in the half court, which is really incredible to see, just considering no TJ Shannon. And that game, McCullough wasn't there either. So that's two of your best ball handlers out for a substantial amount of time, and yet they've had success. And it really just comes down to the Mark Adams-led defense. And we've seen defense be the key in Lubbock for years now. And certainly for this team to have the length and athleticism they have on the perimeter and just being able to put together possessions offensively, it hasn't been pretty, but as long as they can keep grinding out games, it's shown that they're going to be difficult to beat regardless of who the opponent is and regardless of where they're playing.
Yeah, it's been impressive. And that win, you know, Jeff Haxton, who does play-by-play for Texas Tech, was on, I work for SiriusXM, he was on Big 12 Today yesterday, and he really kind of encapsulated, it's like, this is Mark Adams' culture now. This is his team. He kind of put the statements. I know Chris Beard, in terms of accomplishments, is, you know, really far ahead, but Mark Adams hasn't even had the chance there. But in terms of, like, cultural standpoint, he has put his trademark on this, and he is a very, you know, Chris Beard was an interesting cat, right? The fireside chats were always an interesting thing to watch, and a coach who has had such a eclectic basketball upbringing, I think is the right way to put it, with all the places that he has been a coach. I just always thought at some point in time he would go on to the NBA, just because he seemed to be the kind of guy who's like, I can coach anybody, anywhere, anytime, because he has coached anybody, anywhere, anytime. Mark Adams is goofy, is right? Like, is that a right word to say? The video of him sparring with the bear in the circle it's excellent. The interview where he was talking about snakes, I think he was talking about snakes in an interview that he did during one of the games recently. Again, they weren't playing him, but they had him on. He was talking about, I think he was talking about snakes. So he's a different cat, but like this was a classic Texas Tech defensive win. And we've known him as a defensive coordinator, if you will, for Texas Tech hoops for a long time. That Baylor win was basically like that. That seemed like the blueprint of everything that he's kind of been known for.
Yeah, I mean, this is 100% Mark Adams culture at this point. And obviously, Chris Beard has a lot to do with the success that Tech has had over the last few years. And I don't think any sane person isn't going to discredit that. But Mark Adams is Texas Tech hoops at this point. You've seen the defensive culture that he's brought in for years now. The guys in the locker room absolutely love him. I mean, this is a team full of guys that have been close together. You've got guys like Kevin McCullough that willingly came back because Mark Adams was in town and because he was going to be the next coach. And I mean, I would say the best way to describe his like mannerisms and approach is unconventional. Certainly he's got a background that not many D1 coaches can say that they've had. Took his first D1 job at the age of 65, obviously. Mm-hmm. He was a hockey GM back in the day. Took a break from coaching basketball to be a part-time owner and hockey GM. And he's got a lot of unique interests. He was once a Golden Glove boxer. His dad was into boxing. And so he's got a lot of kind of interesting things going on. But certainly his basketball knowledge and ability to coach a great defense is something that's really carried over, not just this year, but even in the past. Like, these past Texas Tech, few years of Texas Tech basketball have been the golden age of Tech basketball. And certainly this year's team looks to be the first one that he's at the helm, and it might be one of the best that we've seen in a long time.
So as it pertains to this group, you know, I think the one thing that I notice is they're a long group, right? They're an athletic group. Would you say that they're necessarily a tall group?
I think it depends on the position that you're looking at. So anywhere up until you get to the bigs, they're taller than average.
Like they're very long and athletic in the middle of the floor.
Yeah. So the actual front court players aren't all that tall. Bryson Williams, Kevin O'Banner, even Daniel Baccio, who's a fan favorite, he's tall, but he's not like egregiously tall. He's not like someone that's a 7'2" guy that's going to really give headaches from just because of his height. But the height that they have on the wings and the guards really makes them a very switchable team. I think that's been a critical part to their success, in addition to the length that they have across the board.
Do you think that the lack of height is something that they can make up for with their athleticism?
Yeah, I think we've seen it in the past with the Mark Adams Texas Tech defense. You see, the 2018 team is a good example of that. When you have guys across the board that are switchable like this team has in spades, then it makes it to where you can put pressure on the opposing bigs and keep them out of the lane. And Tech is currently probably the best in the nation at keeping teams from getting into the paint. And then once they get there, they're still not able to finish effectively. And that's just because of the ball pressure that they're able to put on because of the length. And when teams do get it inside, they can just swarm and keep them from the middle, keep them from getting good open lanes to the basket.
Yeah, that's one of the things that really helps so much with that defensively. If you're long and athletic, it just seems like they have a certain type of player that they want to get when it comes to that. Talk about the offense, you know, this year. I'm not a Mac McClung guy. I never actually was. I don't think many people were. He is what I like to call. He reminds me of like there are a couple guys I tagged this. RJ Barrett was like this. They were volume shooters in college. They weren't necessarily volume scorers, right?
Yeah.
And I thought there were a lot of times last year where the Texas Tech was better off with him actually on the bench, just because of, you know, some of the defensive stuff. He wasn't a really great defender, and took a lot of bad shots, in my opinion. This year, it's like, you know, the scoring is more dispersed, right? They've got mm-hmm. I think three or four guys averaging over 10 plus points per game. And all of those guys can defend. Now, you know, fate of the world on the line here. Who's shooting for Texas Tech is kind of the next part of that question. Who is the guy that's going to get the rock?
Well, right now it has to be someone kind of a committee. I'd go with Kevin McCullough just because of his experience and his leadership that he has. Certainly you want to have TJ Shannon back, because if he comes right back, he's the obvious answer to that. And hopefully he can be back in the next couple of games. I doubt we're going to see him over this weekend, but certainly against Iowa State next week seems to be the anticipated return. And he's got to be the guy. I mean, you saw in the Tennessee game in Madison Square Garden, he was absolutely critical in getting any sort of offense for Tech. And I mean, I don't think it's in years past where you had a Keenan Evans or a Jarrett Culver or a Mac McClung that took every shot at the end of the game, but certainly he's the guy you want to put with the game on the line. You want to put it, the ball in his hands. And if not him, it's got to be McCullough at this point, I would have to imagine.
And so you look at, you know, what kind of faced them. I'm a huge proponent in college basketball of, especially in this conference, you want to figure out like, what is the best version of you, right? What is the best version of you, and can you sustain it? I think there's, you know, I think the people that know college basketball don't do this, but like really tracking a team game by game, especially in this league, doesn't make a ton of sense in terms of like, what do I think of this team? You want to evolve your opinion some, but I think really the point is, all right, what is the best version of this team look like? And, you know, what kind of version could they get away with on a neutral court, you know, when they're playing an NCAA tournament setting, right? That's kind of my question is, all right, yeah, which version of this team, you know, what's like the worst possible scenario and they could win? And also, what is the best version of this team when they're playing a pick hot team at the end of the year that they have to beat to win a big game, whatever it is? And also, can you sustain that quality of play, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the question here is, you know, is Texas Tech peaking too early? No, I think it's so early on that we can't even say that. But it's like, all right, we've had these two great performances back to back. How do we replicate these and how can we apply these to a neutral setting? Are you kind of in agreement with that?
Yeah, I think the thing about these last two games is they haven't really relied on any sort of outlier plays or performances right to win. Like normally when you see a team knock off two straight top 10 teams in the span of 4 days, it happens because you have some sort of outlier shooting. You have a player go for like 35 in one of those games. That hasn't happened with Tech. I mean, sure, you've had a guy like Clarence Ndolni who's maybe played the best basketball of his career the last couple of games, but I think that's as much of an opportunity and kind of just finding ways to score within the system. Like none of the looks that he's getting are unfeasible to expect at any sort of level. And then beyond that, you have to look at the fact that they haven't shot the ball well at all in those two games. I mean, they're shooting still under about 33% from three in conference play. They're by far the worst free throw shooting team in the league so far in conference. And that's going to normalize to some extent because they're not a good shooting team, but they're not that bad. So, I mean, if anything, you would expect some positive regression there. I do think you're going to have nights where the defense isn't going to be quite as good as they were against, say, Baylor. just because I think that was a really critical game and all hands were on deck. And while this is a really consistent defensive bunch that has been good throughout the season, there have been some lapses, and you'd expect over the course of an 18-game conference season or wherever they end up in the tournament, you're going to have a couple of halves or even 10-minute stretches where the defense kind of breaks down. But sort of to answer your question, I think the worst version of this team that could still win a game on a neutral site would be a team that we saw like against Tennessee, where you're not getting any sort of offensive production in the half court and it just looks ugly, but the defense is just keeping you in games. And the wings and the length and athleticism that they have allows them to play that style of game, because when it's a rock fight and when no one's getting anything going offensively, you have to trust the team that defensively has the length to really just make any sort of ball handler scared and just not allow any sort of easy buckets, any trend or any driving lanes, stuff like that. So that's probably the worst version that could win games. I think the best version relies on Terrence Shannon coming back healthy, having some guys start to shoot the ball better. Certainly Kevin O'Banner, I feel like, is due for a bit of a positive regression. You've got Adonis Arms, who's really kind of come onto the scene. Mm-hmm. If he can continue his scoring spurt. And then defensively, guys like Bryson Williams, O'Banner, and then as well as that Marcus Santos Silva, all of those guys have been so good at switching onto ball handlers as bigs, and that's critical to the scheme. And if they continue to do that, then it's going to be hard for teams to find ways to score against Tech, just because normally against a scheme like Tech's, kind of the strategy is to attack the bigs off of switches. And if that's not happening, then it's really difficult to find ways to score.
Yeah, the question for them is one that I have for a lot of teams. It usually, you know, I thought about this with 2018 UVA, right? Was like, all right, they're squeezing the life out of a lot of teams. But when you got to start banging in shots and going shot for shot with a team, can you do it? And that's the thing about, that's what Baylor was last year, right? It's what Baylor was. They had so many guys who could do that. It's what Kansas was not last year. Kansas did not, I mean, Oshai Igbaji is a completely different guy than he was last season. And so that is a question for Tech, right? Is that, all right, when a team's going to start going shot for shot with you, can you do it? And that's kind of something that's going to be answered, I think, more down the line. But to my point earlier, like, I would not be shocked at all if they lose at Kansas State this weekend, because it'll be their fourth game in 7 days, correct? They played Saturday to Saturday. Yeah. Four games
in 7 days.
Right. So I'd, you know, if they lost a game, you know, that's one of those where I'm talking about, like, you can't read it too much. But is your biggest question moving forward kind of a question about the offense? Is that where your mind is with that?
Yeah, I think there's still a level of concern about the offense, just because we've seen the half court offense look really good for two games now, but we've also seen them throw up some bad games against Gonzaga and Tennessee. And there's always a question mark there. Is it a fluke? Is it going to revert back to guys holding onto the ball too long, miscommunications, just not getting in sync offensively? And we're going to see. I mean, I have cautious optimism that the offense is going to get better as opposed to worse, but certainly it's something to be worried about, because defensively, I think more or less most of the nights you're going to be right on it as one of the best defenses in the country.
All right, quick word from our sponsors here, and we'll talk a little Texas Tech football afterwards. Today's show is brought to you by NetSuite. Over 28,000 businesses have already switched to NetSuite. It's the number one cloud financial system to power your growth, with visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more. NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increase their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Now go to netsuite.com, promo code locked. So you do netsuite.com/locked. That is netsuite.com/LOCKED today. All right. So let's touch on a little bit of Texas Tech football here, Embry, before I get you out of here. Positivity still abound, I guess you could say, at Texas Tech, coming off that, I mean, pretty impressive win against Mississippi State with an interim coach. Sonny Cumbie sees himself off, and I actually thought made a pretty good accounting of himself considering that backstretch. They played the four toughest teams in the Big 12, 1-1 in the end against Iowa State, and then also you know, get the bowl win. So I think what was his record in the end? It was like 2-3, I think, in his five games. But still, not an easy five-game stretch for him. I thought he did a good job. And now you guys bring in Joey McGuire. He brings in Kitley, I think is how it's pronounced, right? From
Zach Kitley.
Yeah, Zach Kitley, which is, I mean, I look, you talk about air raid. I mean, I'm not sure if you got to watch much Western Kentucky football this year. They were the most fun team to watch in the country. So that's exciting. And I also think like several good quarterback options. I mean, I think there is an argument for Donovan Smith, Tyler Shuck, and Baron Morton to play next year.
Yeah, I think certainly, first off, looking at the program as a whole, this is arguably the best that Tech fans have felt about the football program since the end of Cliff Kingsbury's first year in 2013 after the bowl win against Arizona State, because you've got a new coach coming in Joey McGuire, who is really up the recruiting level on this team. I mean, we went from being around 80th in the country in recruiting rankings before he came in under Matt Wells to now, post early signing day, they've been anywhere between 35th and 45th, depending on the site you're looking at and depending on the day. So certainly the buzz around this program is immense. Bringing in Zach Kibley as well as Tim DeRoyer to a lesser extent are both really big names to get as coordinators, especially Kibley, just because he's from Lubbock. Obviously his dad coached the track and field team and is really well known around town and around the university. And for Zach, I mean, he's worked with Patrick Mahomes, worked with Bailey Zappe, had probably the best offense from a passing standpoint this season. I watched a lot of tape on him just because I really enjoyed watching that team. And even if Tech didn't hire him, I was hoping he'd go somewhere nice. And I mean, I'm really excited. I know a lot of people around Tech and really around the country even are starting to take a little bit of notice of what Tech did. And obviously having the bowl win over Mississippi State and Mike Leach really helped out. And really just provided a good source of momentum. And you have to thank Sonny Cumbie for that in a lot of ways, because he kept the program together when a lot of guys nationally thought that that would be it for Tech this season. Even though they were 5-3, you fire Wells after that Kansas State game, you go into the toughest four game stretch of the season, and they were heavy underdogs in all four games and found a way to win against Iowa State, played Baylor really close, could have played Oklahoma State close. I think the offense really struggled in that one. But as a whole, it's just been a lot of positive things. And I think the quarterback battle is going to be really interesting going into next year, because you have Donovan Smith, who ended the season on a really high note against Mississippi State, played really well against Iowa State, and then had Baylor and Oklahoma State. Both of those games could have gone a bit better. But certainly a really good battle to watch, because you also have Tyler Shuck, who a lot of people were really high on coming into the season. And then Baron Morton, who's the best quarterback recruit the Tech's had since Graham Harrell. So a lot of guys to choose from, and I think all three could be solid choices depending on how Kitley sees them and depending on exactly what sort of offense we're trying to run for next season.
Right. I think Donovan Smith's the guy we all think about off the top because of his success towards the end. But then you think about the throw-it-around type offense, and that feels like it's more towards the Tyler Shuck mold. And then also Baron Morton, I feel like he's kind of an unknown at this point, right? In terms of what he actually is. So it's a really interesting conversation. But I will say, if you look across the Big 12 conference, and that's usually what I do from my perspective, like, it's a pretty good situation compared to what everybody else has going on. I mean, think about kind of the dysfunction, or not dysfunction, but like Baylor has a legit quarterback battle. Now they won the Big 12 this year, but there's some questions about whether Gary Bohannon is the guy next year. Oklahoma State, Spencer Sanders is like one of the most entrenched quarterbacks, and he is like one of the more inconsistent guys that we can see on a game-to-game basis. You know, the Big 12 championship game to the Fiesta Bowl, I mean, are two completely different people out there. Iowa State is going to have to, usher out their end of their era with Brock Purdy, now potentially Hunter Deckers. And then OU's got Dylan Gabriel, and hell, maybe even Jackson Dart coming in. And how much do we really trust Adrian Martinez at Kansas State? And obviously Kansas is trying to get themselves back up. TCU, are they in on Jackson Dart? What's the situation going to be like there? Now, these things tend to resolve themselves, but I will say, while it's a battle and there's no clear winner, it's three pretty good options. And I think that's kind of the headline for me.
Yeah, I think regardless of who takes the first snap, you have to look at Tech's quarterback situation as being right up there in terms of one of the best in the conference. And I think there's obviously a lot of unknowns, and it doesn't just go for Tech. I mean, obviously you mentioned OU with Dylan Gabriel. I think of all the quarterbacks coming into the conference, he's probably the most well-known and well-respected across the nation. But beyond that, I mean, it's a lot like the last couple of years where you have some really high-level quarterback play, but certainly on Tech's end, being able to have guys like Donovan Smith, who we've seen play really good games and lead the team against Iowa State, put up
it's one of the better played games this year by a quarterback in the Big 12, the Iowa State game.
Yeah, I mean, he was extremely efficient in that game. And then you had Tyler Shuck, who has had his moments through his career where he's looked like a really accurate passer. And I mean, having him coming back from injury, we don't know exactly how he will pan out. Certainly, we didn't get to see him much in conference play, but the early returns were very promising. And then you have Baron Morton, who looks like someone that has a lot of zip and has the mobility to play in a variety of different offenses. And certainly with Kitley, the question is going to be who has the best arm to be able to spread out the ball effectively. And I mean, I truly don't have a favorite at this point. I know a lot of people in the fan base really want to see Donovan Smith, or they really want to see Baron Morton. And then a lot of people across the nation kind of seem to think that Shuck's going to be the guy that kind of reestablishes himself. But I think we're going to have to see in the spring, because it's three guys that have either really high pedigree or really good results so far throughout their career. And it's a good problem to have, because it was just 2 years ago that Tech was going into the offseason with the Alan Bowman coming off of his second season-ending injury, and a Henry Columbia that had just transferred in from Utah State. And
he just actually hopped the portal again, I believe, right? Yesterday.
Just announced his intention to transfer yesterday. So, I mean, Tech's been in a much worse spot from a quarterback standpoint going into at least two of the last 3 years. And I would say that the biggest thing is all of the guys on the table have the natural talent to play the position well. It's just going to be about who Kitley wants to see in the offense and who he thinks can provide them with the best chance to win, given the pieces around them and given what system they're going to be in.
All right. One more quick word from our sponsors here, then I'll get you out of here. Today's show is brought to you by GetUpside. If you guys want to save at the pump today, download the GetUpside app and use the promo code SCORE, S-C-O-R-E, SCORE. You guys will save up to 25%, 25 cents per time at the pump, and get an extra 25 cents the first time. So you can get up to 50 cents cash back per gallon of gas the first time you go to the pump with the GetUpside app. Promo code SCORE, S-C-O-R-E, SCORE, today with GetUpside. Also, today's show is brought to you by our friends at betonline.ag. Go to betonline.ag today. Use the promo code LOCKEDON, L-O-C-K-E-D-O-N, Locked On. And you'll receive a 50% deposit bonus. You deposit $100, give an extra 50 to play with today. They got basketball, football, baseball futures, hockey, MMA, racing, whatever you want to bet on, they've got there. And I also have Vegas casino games too. So once again, betonline.ag. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. All right, Emery, plug anything you want. You can talk about y'all's podcast, what you're working on, plug the Twitters again, everything. Where can people find Locked On Texas Tech?
All right, so the official podcast Twitter account is at LockedOnTTU. We like to keep it simple, just posting the links to our shows, just to kind of make it so where if you put on notifications, you're not going to get any tweets of us saying random stuff from the official account. But if you want to hear our everyday feedback and information, you can follow me, EddieRacer41. I like to do a lot of tech content and some NBA, Formula One, whatever, sprinkled in. And then if you want to follow Ryan,
Are you an F1 guy too?
Yeah, big F1.
Who's your favorite driver? Who's your driver?
I'm a big Gasly fan. Also like Leclerc as well. So yeah.
Nice. All right. Sorry I interrupted you. Keep going.
Yeah. But anyways, so you can follow Ryan at R Mainville LBK. He does a lot of good stuff when it comes to publishing tech articles up for the Dallas Morning News, as well as obviously putting stuff up about our podcast and just being a good source of information in general. And then lastly, if you want to go follow any of my other personal accounts, you can look at my Instagram at emery.lida if you just want to see what I do in general. And aside from that, I mean, stay tuned for our new YouTube account that we're going to be launching in the next couple of days. And I'm really excited to continue talking about this basketball team, because as good as the Baylor and Kansas win was, it's still only January and everything happens in March. So looking forward to it.
All right, Emery Lida, one half of the hosting tandem of the new Locked On Texas Tech podcast. Emery, talking to you real soon.
Yep. Thank you, Josh.